With the current pandemic, kids are having many more opportunities to play video games for entertainment and to socialize. But many of the most popular games are these so-called first-person shooters, which simulate violent and often realistic situations. There has been some concern that this type of violent media may be impacting our children in ways that promote aggressive behavior. I'm Charles Blue with the Association for Psychological Science, and to help us understand what's really going on, I have with me Chris Ferguson.
Hi, I'm Chris Ferguson. I'm a professor of psychology at Stetson University in Florida, and I've been studying the topic of violence in video games for over 15 years at this point.
Recently, Perspectives on Psychological Science published a paper you were lead author on that took a fresh look at some earlier data on this. Tell me a little bit about what your paper found and what you were trying to research.
Yeah, so we were interested in looking at, you know, whether there was any kind of consistent evidence to suggest that violence in video games could be linked to aggressive behavior in players, whether those players are kids or young adults. So people have been doing this research for probably, you know, 30 some years at this point, going way back into the 80s. And it's not uncommon to hear, you know, scholars or professional groups or other politicians make these kind of conclusive claims one way or another about whether games do or don't cause aggression. And what we wanted to do was look at a particular pool of evidence, particularly coming from, you know, sort of around 2009 through 2015, and see if the evidence in that particular time period, which really informed a lot of politics, informed some, you know, positions from professional organizations, did this evidence really provide evidence for a consistent link between games and aggression? And what we found is that, generally speaking, no, there really wasn't this evidence for a link that was, or at least a consistent link between violent video games and aggression. And our conclusion is that people really should be much more cautious, or should have been much more cautious, about publicly stating that there was evidence for these types of links based on the evidence that was available at that time.
Well, how did we go down this path in the first place? Were there cases, reports of increased aggression or violence from children when video games were being used? Or was it just somebody made sort of the leap to assume that that was happening?
Yeah, I mean, so people have linked the idea of violence in video games to aggressiveness or violent crime going way back into the 80s. So the decision that video games are bad or violent video games are bad was made really before there was any data. And so you can see politicians going back to, you know, really like the early 80s claiming that video games were one of the leading causes of family violence. And they were talking about like Pac-Man and Centipede and things like that.
Pretty benign games, actually.
You know, so how we've conceptualized this idea of violence in video games has obviously changed, you know, over time. And, you know, then the 90s, you had like the Mortal Kombat games and such. They got, you know, a lot of attention as well, which, you know, were at least perhaps more plausible as violent video games. But it was really, I think, in 1999, the Columbine Massacre kind of solidified in the public's mind this idea that there was a link between violent video game playing and, you know, the two youths in that situation played Doom, the video game, and, you know, these kind of mass shootings, these mass homicides and such. And from that point, once a decision is made, you know, once people kind of made this decision that this thing is bad, it's linked to mass homicides, it's confirmation bias. People begin to look for evidence to support their views. They ignore evidence that doesn't support that views. And that's true for the psychological studies. It's true for actual mass homicide events. Whatever pool of data we look at, we can see that there really was kind of this audience of older adults, I think, for the most part, that scholars, politicians, news media were all catering to, supporting this narrative, and kind of in the pattern of other moral panics, whether we're talking about like Dungeons and Dragons in the 80s or rock music in the 80s also, or comic books in the 50s, that essentially the audience eventually dies. I mean, be kind of blunt about it. And, you know, when that happens, the audience is gone, the incentives for supporting that narrative go away, and people just kind of move on to whatever the new technology is, whatever the new media is. And I think we're getting there with violence in video games. We're now moving on to like smartphones and social media and things like that that people are panicking over. So,
one general question, have you played any of these violent, so-called violent video games? And if you did, what was your takeaway from them?
Yeah, so I mean, I grew up in the Atari 2600 era, so I was playing all the violent video games like Pac-Man and Centipede of the early 80s, which technically, I mean, if you look at like the definition of a violent video game, they actually technically do apply. Most people today don't think of them as violent video games, and I'm not necessarily saying that's a great definition, but yeah, I mean, I played them then, and you know, as probably most, you know, particularly males, and of course, there are a lot of women gamers too, I don't want to, you know, imply otherwise, but you know, particularly as a boy growing up in the 80s with the Atari 2600, you know, I sort of grew up in this video game culture. For a man of my age, I'm probably a pretty average level, you know, sort of gaming enthusiast. I enjoy games. I enjoy a fairly wide variety of games. So I do play some of the, you know, the first person shooter games, but I also play a lot of strategy games and role-playing games, various other games as well. So, I mean, they're fun. I mean, I'm not going to lie. They're entertaining. You know what I mean? They're, you know.
Absolutely. And I was one of the first in line to get the Mortal Kombat game when it came out for home systems. And I recall there was quite a bit of controversy then because hidden in one of the game cartridges was a secret code that could unlock blood mode. And when they released it to the public, it was very sanitized. It was just punching, kicking. But then you could actually add in the blood. And that caused a great deal of consternation in some circles. That's very tied into what you're talking about here.
Absolutely. And there have been other situations where, you know, in fairness, there was like sort of hidden content. I mean, the other one that was sort of famous was the Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, which had partially wiped over code that could be unlocked with a mod. You know, so it wasn't part of the game you bought, but it was in there. And a mod could unlock it. And that was that hot coffee mod that had some salacious sexual content and stuff. And that really created a big uproar. I think now all the big outrages have happened for the most part with video games. And so, you know, now when you have a game that's got some nudity or some sex in it, you really don't see much outcry, about that anymore. So I think we've really kind of broached all of the potential outrages for, maybe I shouldn't say that. I'm like daring people to come up with something else.
But, yeah, there's always something else. It is kind of interesting that I have seen videos recently of the most current version of Mortal Kombat, and the degree of carnage in that, realistic carnage, is beyond all measure. And when you look back at the ones of the first generation of them, that you can hardly believe they're the same franchise. Mm-hmm. So things have really increased with the quality of graphics. Mm-hmm. And has that been something that's been keeping it alive? I mean, obviously, if this was something that popped up in the 80s, it could have easily been put to the wayside, but the technology's changed.
Yeah, I definitely think that's something that has kind of kept this moral panic going for video games. It's this ever-increasing technology. That's different from like rock music in the 80s and comic books, which were kind of static. So again, I don't think anybody thinks now that like playing Centipede is going to cause any problems for kids, you know, but now we eventually moved on to like the games of the 90s, like Doom and Mortal Kombat, which by today's standard look incredibly pixelated, cartoonish. And again, most people probably wouldn't really think of them as being terribly problematic. But now we've moved on to, you know, beautiful graphics in a lot of games, just gorgeous, gorgeous gameplay in a lot of games now, you know, deeper storylines and all of that. And, you know, and eventually we're moving into now both games that have augmented reality like Pokemon Go and then virtual reality games, you know, so we have a virtual reality system in our lab now. We're looking at some VR type systems. But I remember, like, you know, when Pokemon Go came out, I think it was the summer of 2017, if I remember right. And there were articles in the newspaper talking about how this was going to cause schizophrenia in kids because kids couldn't distinguish, you know, you're basically playing on your phone, little animals, you know, sort of superimposed on your camera on the phone. And they were saying like kids wouldn't be able to distinguish, you know, between reality and fiction. And, you know,
and
no
the real problem was just, okay, no time for homework because I have to go out and catch this next animal.
Or try not to walk into the street. the other one.
Well, I also have one tangential question to this, and that is the focus of play, particularly for young boys as it was marketed from the 70s, 60s, and 50s. I've looked at commercials online from that time, and it's Hopalong Cassidy with a gun that pops out of the hat. There were very realistic guns. You played games with army characters, and the TV shows, even like Roadrunner and some classic Disney ones, were very violent. Was there any connection between this? Did people look back on that and say, oh, well, here's evidence in the past of this causing violent behavior, so we have to worry about now that it's more virtual? Or are those really separated? Was there never any connection between the two?
And certainly people are selective in terms of the things they pay attention to. I mean, you know, so no, there isn't like a big outcry about like watching football or other like highly aggressive sports, you know, for instance, you know, which you think would be quote unquote bad in the same way that playing a video game would be or whatever else, you know. So yeah, people kind of like pick the things they don't like and, you know, and focus in on those things and sort of hype up how dangerous those would be. I mean, really the kind of like the big connection for video games was, of course, like the prior literature on television violence, which had been going on for several decades. And that literature was never very good either. But there was this kind of like hyping of the idea that watching Bugs Bunny cartoons or watching the A-Team in the 80s or, you know, or shows like that could somehow cause kids to become aggressive. And it's funny because, you know, you could get this kind of like you can't win effect, you know, in the sense that people always complained about like the Bugs Bunny cartoons because like the characters would get shot in the face with a shotgun and nothing bad would really, you know, they would be sort of played for comedy, but they would still live. They'd be, you know, they would survive it. But on the other hand, if you make the violence realistic and more gory and the people clearly are dead, then the people are upset about that too. So it doesn't really matter how you portray the violence. It's just the fact that it's there is going to make people, you know, angry. But I think a lot of it came up, you know, also because in, you know, in the late 60s and continuing until the 90s, there was this kind of like violent crime wave in the United States and people were really looking for explanations for why that happened. And people tied that to particularly television. And then that went away. I mean, after 1993, we went back to 1960s levels where violent crime rates were back to these kind of historic lows in the United States. And that happened.
So there wasn't a need to find a scapegoat at that point.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And the idea that like television was involved, I mean, television never got any less violent. We added video games and other forms of exposure to media violence on top of that, and violent crime reduced. And bullying went down and all kinds of other things went down. So it doesn't look like these are major contributors to the concerns we have, you know, if we're looking at real like societal aggression or societal violence.
Well, I want to take one moment to go back to the paper that you recently published. This is something that not everyone really understands. It was a meta-analysis. So you didn't go out and do independent studies.
Right.
How did you come to the conclusion and what did you do to make the final conclusion of your paper?
A meta-analysis is basically a study that combines, you know, existing research papers. You know, so if they're, I think in this case, we had somewhere around 60 to 70 different studies that have been done within this time frame of about 5 or 6 years. And what you do is you take those individual papers, those individual studies, and combine them together and look for patterns within them. Because what you tend to find is, of course, they disagree with each other. You know, there are some studies that find effects or some studies that don't find effects. Some studies say that violent video games reduce aggression. You know, so how do you make sense of all this stuff? And it's not like, or at least it shouldn't be that you just sort of smoosh them all together and say like the average wins. It's, you know, that's not necessarily the right way of sort of thinking of these things. But more you can look for patterns. So if some studies are finding effects and some studies are not finding effects, why is that the case? You know, what is different between those studies? And what we find is that there are a lot of quality issues, you know, with a lot of these studies. You know, a lot of these studies are not matching the games very well. So you have one game that's a violent game, one game that's a non-violent game, but they differ in so many other ways that if you find a difference, it's hard to say it was because of the content. One game might be just more difficult to learn, and so people are frustrated when you take the controls out of their hands after 15 minutes. The aggression measures were very poor in some of these studies, and you know, it looked like in some cases, you know, we can't say definitively, but we can infer that some researchers were kind of picking and choosing outcomes that fit their hypotheses and ignoring those that maybe didn't. And what we generally found is in this pattern that the studies that were more rigorous, that, you know, matched the games better, that used clinically validated aggression measures, you know, that had other sort of positive features to them, were much less likely to find evidence for effects than were those that we consider to be less high quality. So our conclusion thus is that quality matters, you know, and not only does
quality matter. Yes.
Yeah, that's not, probably not controversial in of itself, but
no.
Not only does quality matter, but the higher quality studies were much less likely to find evidence for effects. And therefore, that is at very least a cautionary note for us in that when we see people that aren't hedging their bets at all, they're saying like, yes, this is definitely a thing. We get really kind of nervous because I think this pattern suggests that people ought to be much more cautious and attributing any kind of cause and effect relationship here.
So if you were to summarize this for a general audience, if parents came up to you and said, hey, I'm concerned the kids have been online for virtually, you know, the past week playing games because they can't go outside or they can't play with friends, and they're worried about that, your answer to them would be what?
I think if parents are worried during the pandemic about, you know, video games causing aggression, first off, they ought to be worried about COVID-19, right? You know, yes. So if video games are keeping them safe at home, this is a good thing. In terms of worrying about aggression, there does not seem to be evidence that parents need to put this in the front burner in terms of worrying about video games causing aggressiveness or bullying or violent crime or outcomes like that. Really, the big thing with video games or other technology is just making sure it's balanced, you know, that the kids are getting enough sleep, they're getting their schoolwork done, they're pretty happy, they're getting a half hour to an hour of exercise every day. Other than that, there's not even a magic number I can say that is like after 2 hours, your kid explodes. As long as
that would be a pretty obvious data point.
that would be a pretty good sign of harm. But other than that, I mean, as long as the kid is happy getting their schoolwork done and exercising a little bit, then especially during the pandemic, you know, all our previous understanding of what the rules are out the window. So if this technology is keeping them socializing, and a lot of kids do socialize through video games when they can't do that face-to-face now, if it's keeping them home and safe and they're getting everything else done they need to do, I wouldn't worry about it terribly.
I've been speaking to Chris Ferguson, who has been studying the impact or the potential impact of violent video games on aggression on children. I'm Charles Blue with the Association for Psychological Science, and thank you very much again.
Thank you for having me on today. It was a pleasure.